So I was properly humiliated at horseshoes that day, I remember well, and decided that I didn't know anything about horseshoes after all. Well, in life, a lot of people think that they're good at things either before they actually try them, or maybe because they haven't been challenged to demonstrate their abilities in that certain area. A lot of people think they're pretty good at religion, but maybe they don't demonstrate that very well. In James chapter 2 and verse 16, 1 and verse 26, I'm sorry, a little dyslexic this morning. James 1 and verse 26. If anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless. So here's someone who thinks he's good at something, he claims to be religious, but because he doesn't bridle his tongue, he's demonstrating that he's really not any good at it. James is dealing with someone who is self-deluded. He makes a pretense of being religious, considers himself perhaps to be good, a religious person and right in the eyes of God, but he is not. Which should we believe about a person? What he professes, what he thinks about himself, or what he shows? This text teaches, doesn't it, that what a person shows really is what we should believe about them. In Luke chapter 6 and verse 45, Jesus explained that a good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things. An evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart brings forth evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. We speak what is in our hearts, and it really identifies who and what kind of person we truly are within. And so to be religious people, to be people who are true to our faith and who act it out in a way that's pleasing to God in our lives, we need to bridle the tongue. That's the message of James 1 and verse 26. Bridling the tongue involves three things, just to start out with as basic principles before we get into specific applications in this lesson. First of all, when bridling the tongue involves restraint. When you bridle an animal, that animal can no longer just go in any direction that it wants to. It is, in that sense, restrained. And so it is with the tongue. When we bridle the tongue, if you don't bridle the tongue, it just goes every which way. But to bridle it is to control it, is to restrain it. And it can't just say anything it wants to say, go any place it wants to go in a train of thought or conversation. In Proverbs 10 and verse 19, the wise man said that when there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. The more you talk, the more likely you are to sin. But the rest of that verse says that he who restrains his lips is wise. So bridling the tongue is in part restraining your lips, not allowing your tongue just to say anything, to personify it, anything that it wants to. Again, in Proverbs chapter 17 and verse 27, he who restrains his words has knowledge. He who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. Even a fool, when he keeps silent, is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is counted prudent. As sometimes we paraphrase that, it's better to keep quiet and be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. I think that restraint is what's being counseled in all of these wise proverbs. So restraint, secondly, caution. You have to be careful with the tongue. James will say later it's an unruly evil full of deadly poison. James chapter 3. Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 2. Do not be hasty in word or impulsive in thought to bring up a matter in the presence of God. For God is in heaven and you are on the earth. Therefore, let your words be few. And again, we're counseling here, the wise man is Solomon. He's saying you need to restrain, but you also just need to be careful because you're just a human being on earth and God is in heaven, and you better watch what you say in his presence. You better watch what you say. It is wise to be cautious in the presence of those who are great and powerful. You may work in an office or factory or something somewhere, and in your work group, there might be a lot of, you know, casual banter that goes on and joking conversation and who knows what all. But when the big boss, say the corporate boss, you know, comes in, that's the time to watch what you're saying. Well, we are always in the presence of our corporate boss. And we need to be cautious about what we say in his presence. Matthew chapter 12 and verse 36, here's what Jesus said. I say to you that every careless word that men shall speak, they shall render account for it in the day of judgment. I don't want to speak any careless words. I need to be cautious with my tongue. He goes on to say, for by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. I want you to remember that later in this lesson when we talk about specific applications regarding bridling our tongues. We need to be cautious. We're going to be judged by our words. Thirdly, bridling the tongue implies giving the tongue direction. We restrain it. It just can't go anywhere it wants to. We're cautious, but also we give it a direction to go in. When you have the horse's bridle, you can turn that horse one way or the other. You give it its direction. And so it is with the tongue when the tongue is bridled. In Proverbs 16 and verse 23, the heart of the wise teaches his mouth. So the mouth is restrained from just saying whatever it wants to, but the heart of the wise teaches his mouth what it should say and adds learning to his lips, he goes on to say. In 15 and verse 28 of Proverbs, the heart of the righteous studies how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours forth evil. So the heart of the righteous is careful about what it's going to say, considers what to be said. Paul counsels the preacher Titus in Titus chapter 2 and verse 7 that he is to show in doctrine integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that one who is an opponent may be ashamed having nothing evil to say of you. We're going to make some more applications, as I said, in just a minute of these principles. But here, let me make one brief application. We need to give thought and guidance to our tongues and our keyboards before we say things on social media that a Christian ought not to say. It's easy to sit there, if many of us are on social media, and give a quick response to something that we disagree with or spout off an opinion about something that may be more emotion-based than truth-based, or say something in such a way that is either unkind or corrupt or vile. And you better stop and think about it. Because you'll be judged by every careless word. Direct those words. Direct them the way that the Lord would do as he would do and say as he would say in those situations. Now let's think about some specific applications of these principles. What it involves day by day to have a tongue that's bridled. Well, a tongue that's bridled shows reverence for God. In the prayer that we call sometimes the model prayer, Jesus teaching us how to pray, he begins that in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 9 by saying, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed, one translation says, hallowed be thy name. The word hallowed means something that's holy, something that's sacred, or something that is to be revered. After all, God is the creator of the universe. He is Lord of all. We ought to speak of him respectfully, We need to hold His name in reverence and hallow it. We ought to be in awe of God. Have you ever known someone who people just respected so much, either maybe because of his accomplishments in some field of endeavor? And it's almost when they speak his name, you know, it's almost there's a specialness to that. Great athletes. Great people in the field of business. Great statesmen. I mean, you can't say the names of George Washington. I was thinking last night about Abraham Lincoln. You just say that name. And it's like, there's somebody special. God is most special of all. And His name needs to be treated in that way. The Israelites, of course, were commanded not to take God's name in vain, Deuteronomy 5 and verse 11 and elsewhere. Don't use God's special holy name In a flippant or disrespectful way. Choose your words carefully, especially when you're in the presence of God or referring to God. Don't take His name in vain. The word vain means something that is useless, something that maybe is an idle remark. It derives from a word that means to rush over something, to be careless with something. How often have we heard someone use the names of God or Jesus in vain as an exclamation? They're used in our culture all the time with the linguistic equivalence, I think, of something like, oh wow. Only they just plug the name of God or Jesus into that statement. Showing no reverence at all for the Creator of the universe and His only begotten Son. Not thinking about God at all. Just a careless and vain remark. Let's be careful about that. And let me add one thing to this. I've made this point before, and I need to make it about every time I make this point. Some people won't use the name of God, but somehow it's okay to use the word Lord, and we hear a lot of, oh Lord this, or Lordy, Lordy that, so on and so forth. And I want you to know that as far as many English translations of the Bible are concerned, the word Lord is actually the personal name of God in the Scriptures. And you can go back through the Old Testament, a number of references, and see where the name of God, Yahweh or Jehovah, is translated Lord most of the time in our English translations. Be very cautious about how you use the word Lord. It is God's name. Probably more His personal name than any other that we have in Scripture. The bridle tongue shows reverence for God. The bridle tongue refrains from cursing and profanity. Cursing in the Bible is kind of an interesting thing. It has with it the idea most of the time of condemning someone or calling God to condemn someone or placing a curse on someone, maybe in the name of God. And so it's a little bit different from what we think of today when we talk about cursing. But I'm going to show you that they're really, in essence, the same thing when you get down to the nitty-gritty of it all. In discussing how it is that everyone is guilty of sin in Romans chapter 3, of course, Paul winds up that discussion and says in verse 23 that all have sinned, come short of the glory of God. But earlier on in chapter 3 and verse 14, he talks about those whose mouths are full of cursing. In a moment of weakness, you might remember Peter was trying to demonstrate that he was not to be associated with Christ when he was denying Christ those three times. And one of the things that he did to demonstrate his disassociation with Christ is that he cursed. Remember that? Now, again, the word cursing, as it's used in the Bible, is normally to express a condemnation or call a curse upon somebody or something. Let's bring the idea of cursing over into modern times. When a person stubs their toe on a chair and mutters words to the effect that they desire the chair to go to eternal punishment, does the chair have a soul? Is hell real? Sure it is. But can a non-living thing spend eternity in hell? Do you really desire to see anyone or anything go to hell? Well, then why would a person say that? Anybody that has any understanding of the biblical concept of hell, and almost no matter how hardened and worldly they might be, if they had any understanding of that at all, surely would not wish a thing to go to hell, let alone a person to go to hell. And yet, we hear that again all the time. Someone says, well, you know, I hurt my toe and I was just in a moment and I was just kind of being flippant and I didn't really mean it. That's the point. You didn't really mean it. It's vain. You're taking something that's sacred and holy and you're profaning it with common usage. Profanity involves a lot more than our speech. And again, this is something we've talked about in previous lessons at times. You know, the idea of profanity is taking something that's holy and treating it like it's just a common, ordinary, everyday thing. And we do that maybe in worship or in various aspects of our lives when we don't treat sacred things and holy things with the proper reverence and respect. But as far as the application of this lesson, certainly profanity applies to words that shouldn't be used in a common, everyday way. We already mentioned the names of God and names of Jesus. There are a lot of other concepts that are holy concepts. Hell is one of them. Here's a place prepared by God for the eternal punishment of those who disregard His will. It is a special, spiritually significant place. And to just bring it on earth as if it's just a common sort of thing is inappropriate. The New Testament condemns those who are unholy and profane. 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 9. And Leviticus 19 and verse 12. The Old Testament says, "You shall not swear by my name falsely, nor shall you profane the name of your God. I am the Lord." And so we hear sometimes people in a string of profane words. Words, you know, where they're damning someone or condemning someone to hell or using words we'll talk about in a little bit also in profane ways. And then sprinkled right in the middle of all those words, you'll hear God's name, right in the middle of all that. That's profanity. That's profanity. The bridal tongue, I'm going to get back to that in a little bit, but I'm going to go forward right now for just a minute. The bridal tongue refrains from foolish and coarse speech. You might look at Ephesians chapter 5. I'm not going to read all of this. We're going to reference this again, Lord willing, tonight in our lesson. But in verse 3, the apostle says, "But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not even be named among you as is fitting for saints, neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks." So here are some words that are not fitting for Christians, that are not, these things are not even to be named among us. Filthiness, talk that is obscene or shameful. We should not be sprinkling our language with words dealing with sexual actions, for instance, when you think about, let me just pause there. You think about the relationship between a man and a woman, designed by God to be consummated in the holy bonds of matrimony. What do we call it? The holy bonds of matrimony. Why do we call it holy bonds? It's a holy thing. The relationship between a man and a woman is a holy thing. And when we talk about it as if it's a common thing, and use, and it's all the time in our culture, and more so all the time, you hear people using words, well, I won't even say what they start with, but you hear it all the time. Dropping this bomb and that bomb, you know. And it's a profanity of the sexual relationship between a man and a woman, which is a holy relationship. Foolish talk is mentioned in this context. Coarse jesting, the vulgar jokes that are common in workplaces at times, in locker rooms and such as that. The bridal tongue refrains from foolish and coarse speech. The bridal tongue is not going to gossip or tell tales. And I think this is important for us to realize as well. Certainly, most of us understand that gossip is sinful, but most of us don't see when we're doing it. It's easy to say, yeah, that's something we shouldn't be doing, but sometimes it's hard to see what's wrong with it. Gossips and busybodies say things that they ought not. 1 Timothy 5:13 tells young widows who would be wandering around from house to house and idle gossips saying things that they ought not. A gossip is someone who can give all the details of a situation without knowing any of the facts, without knowing really what's right about a situation. Their words are tasty, but they create trouble. In Proverbs chapter 26 and verse 20, where there is no wood, the fire goes out. When there's no talebearer, strife ceases. The words of a talebearer are like tasty trifles, and they go down into the inmost body. The bridal tongue isn't a tongue to kind of combine these last couple of points together. The bridal tongue isn't a tongue that is flowery, or makes evil things sound good. And I think in both of the concepts of coarse speech and gossip, there is this concept, even among God's people sometimes, that you can say an evil thing, you can say something that's coarse, you can say something that's really gossip, as long as you make it sound good. As long as you make it sound nice and flowery, then that's okay somehow. Let me explain to you what I'm talking about. We use words that we call euphemisms. And a euphemism, basically, again, is a word that is used in place of a coarser word, a more blunt word. It's used in place of that to make it sound smoother, to make it more acceptable, to make it sound nicer. It's not really changing the meaning at all, but it sounds better. And so, instead of a garbage collector, we call somebody a sanitation engineer. That sounds nicer, doesn't it? Well, he's the garbage man. Well, he's the sanitation engineer. See how much nicer that sounds? What's the difference? Not any. You're describing the same thing, aren't you? He does the same job, no matter which you call him. Euphemisms don't change the meaning, they just make something sound more pleasant. And people do this constantly in their speech. Let me ask you a question. What's the meaning of the following words? Gosh, golly, G, goodness. G whiz. OMG. Now, all of those words are euphemisms. They sound okay, but they mean the same as either God or Jesus. Just look them up in the dictionary. The meaning's the same. Not only is God being referred to casually, but we are corrupting His holy name in the process. It doesn't sound like it. We've replaced a word with another word, but the word means the same thing. Again, look up the words. We hear other words, some that I have used when I was younger that I had to learn not to. Words like shoot, look that up in a dictionary and see what it means as an interjection. I hear words sometimes like heck or darn. Again, look those up in a dictionary. Somebody says, well, those words don't mean that. That's not what I mean when I say those words. And maybe you convinced yourself that you don't. But it is often what's conveyed when you say those words. Let me use this illustration, and I've sort of devised this sentence a number of years ago, and I've used it in a lot of different places. I imagine some of you have heard me use this, but I want you to think about this sentence and see if you can say in your mind what it means. See if you can tell what this sentence means. People who don't believe in gosh or gee will go to heck. Anybody have any trouble understanding what that sentence means? I didn't think so. That's because what gosh and gee and heck mean is pretty obvious to everybody. The bridal tongue watches out for that and controls it. And I'll be honest with you, as someone, as I said, there are a couple of those words I had to remove from my vocabulary when I was a younger man, and it was hard to do. But bridling the tongue isn't easy, because it is an unruly evil full of deadly poison, and it does not want to be bridled. The bridal tongue speaks the truth. Our culture practices and justifies the practice of lying at every turn. And again, we hear euphemisms. Political spin. What does political spin mean? You know, some political event happens or world event happens and the president will come out with something and Congress will come out with something and the presidential candidates will come out with some comments about whatever this has happened and everybody says, well, the spin that they put on this is, or the spin that this one put on that was. What do they mean by spin? It's a euphemism for a lie, isn't it? It's a euphemism for a lie. When David looked at the world, or the psalmist in Psalm 116 and verse 11, he said, I said in my haste, all men are liars. You look around and it seems like that. It seems like that. In David's time and still today. I'm thankful that all men are not liars. If they were, there'd be nobody to go to heaven, because Revelation chapter 21 and verse 8 says that all liars will have their part in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone. So I'm sure that all men are not liars. We need to be cautious that the things that we say are the truth. James in James chapter 3 and verse 2 tells us if we can control our tongues, if we can bridle those tongues, we can control the whole body. We can control anything if we can control our tongues. That tells us, first of all, that how important it is to control the tongue, but also it might indicate that there is a real difficulty in doing it. Someone has said it's really difficult to control the tongue because it's located in a wet place where you're apt to slip. And I think there's maybe some truth in that. It's easy to make slips of the tongue. Our prayer is this morning, let the words of my mouth in the meditation of my heart, be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Here's the thing. It's not about saying what I want to say. The bridled tongue is bridled because I want to please my God. There's our motivation. There's our reason. If your concept is, well, I want to bridle my tongue because so I won't get, you know, in trouble with the preacher, you are missing the point. As if you're going to, you know, you get in trouble, as if that means anything anyway. We're trying to please the God of heaven. Yeah, it's hard to do when it comes to bridling the tongue. But you'll be so thankful that you did. In what we've said this morning, we haven't nearly touched everything we could have said about controlling our tongues, but in what we have said, we may have touched a nerve. I hope that if that's the case in your life, you'll consider seriously changes that might need to be made after you get over being mad at me, that you'll be willing to do that. There are a lot of great uses of the tongue. One is to confess Jesus as your Lord. Jesus promised that if we'll confess Him before men, He'll confess us before His Father in heaven. And that would be a wonderful use of your tongue this morning, to name the name of Jesus, submit to His will, and be baptized for the remission of your sins, to become Christian. Or maybe you've been sinning in a way with your tongue or in some other way that you need to confess to this group this morning and ask for the prayers. We'd ask you to come while we stand and sing.